Accession number 30342, reel 3.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're walking along down route march, and it showed gas. You had to put your gas mask on, and you would see a double march, and you know, a double with a gas mask on. All that.
What was that experience like after the march with a gas mask on?
Well, you didn't like it. It was very uncomfortable, but if you kept your gas mask clean, which a lot of blokes didn't, like I said, that you know, you could have had to see where you're going, things like that, you think, and you'd fall over, and of course. Because they didn't put gas when you're walking about. But gas, you showed gas when you're marching along, they put a gas mask on. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Now, looking at your training squad that you were with, did everybody cope with the route marches? Did everybody cope with the discipline? Or were the people that couldn't? Were the people that, because the people always talk about, like, there's always like an awkward soldier that can't quite get the hang of it. And
yeah, you always get some guy that didn't know his left from his right sort of thing. And that, you know.
So was anybody like that you can remember?
I suppose we did have, yeah, I can't, just one me main side right now.
So how did you cope with it? How did you cope with the road marches?
Well, not bad, I wasn't bad. No, I can say, I was okay. I never dropped out of any marsh, I didn't.
About how many, if you had like a company size bunch of men, would usually everybody get to the end of?
Oh no. As a matter of fact, when I'm going to get in the battalion now, went on some exercise. There's only two in my company. Yeah, my company finished a route march. That was myself and the commanding officer called Major Hillis, and he took this as well.
There's only two out of 100 and
finished it. No. Well, what is it? Well, yeah. Only two of us finished.
How long was the march?
Must have been quite some distance. I can't really recall. But you see, you march and then you double, and you march and you double, and you march and you double, and thing. And probably not only route march, you're running and sticking your bayonet in and crawling about and different things like that. You know.
So it was like a proper training exercise.
Exercise, which lasted quite a time. Like, you know, it was only the two of us finished.
Talking about this period as well, but also at Brandsmouth, when you were on a road march and somebody dropped out, what was the NCOs and the officers, what was their attitude? Because obviously, was it easy to fall back, or obviously you'd have to, whoever did it would have to convince them that they really were exhausted, or did anybody try and pretend that they were exhausted when they were?
Well, they probably did, they probably did. But they used to get right old rollick and things. You couldn't get away with much. There was one fella, Jimmy Kane, this lad who finally got killed. And when we were on this exercise, well, it was in the battalion, this is. There was like a wicker fence, and we had a rifle and bayonet running along. How do you get over this wicker fence? There was a stud about 3'6" high, so we got about 3 foot high, with points on that, you know. And there was very old when he got across. So what this Jimmy Cairns did, he took his rifle and bayonet up and put them at his side and jumped over the fence, and he jumped out of his bayonet, with it in his leg, and he lay there shouting and hollering and all that. Sergeant Major Ellington come along, he says, "You bloody idiot," he says, "pull it out," he says, "go and start all over again." He didn't sort of give any medical attention to us, but it goes straight back into the water, soft course again, and goes over again. That was all his sympathy he got up there. Mm. And he jumped on his own bayonet. He shouldn't have put it over those, shouldn't have took it off that. He shouldn't have took his rifle and put it over the side of the fence.
What was your attitude what was the discipline like? But, you know, obviously you'd come from civilian life, you'd come from, you know, quite the, you know, relaxed civilian, you know, job, whatever, and you were into the army. How did the discipline, did the discipline seem necessary or was it unnecessary? What did people think about?
Well, I think at first you didn't think it was necessary, but I think as you realised later on, you got a lot of young men together, and young men can be strong and obstructive and all that sort of thing. So they had to sort of be really disciplined. You know. I never said any nonsense at all, you know. And, you know, whatever you said was right, you wouldn't argue. If you did argue, you found out the hard way. Was a very smart thing to do.
What would they do if you talk back?
Well, they'd probably make you go and jack a CV and then go again and again and again. And it would have you, when you've done your day's work in the army, you see, when you finish say about 5 o'clock, You relax, oh yeah, shattered, and you put your feet under in your bed, whatever. You had to go and report every hour, every other hour, to the guard room. All smartly dressed up and all that. When we were all lying about the distributor thing again, you had to go every hour, every hour, every hour, thing, you know. And in the finish, you never got a chance to get rest at all. Next morning, you had to be guard room again before anybody else could rest and things like that. So I wonder how you learned the hard way now.
And did everybody more or less draw the line after a little bit?
In bed, you always got the odd one that was a bit more awkward than anybody else, think, but on the whole, that you realised that it was foolish to do that. So.
I think you mentioned off the tip somebody that you went into the army with, and they weren't there very long. You mentioned that you're all bricklayers.
Yeah.
Except who was this one?
Well, there's one called, I don't know what his name was, but he was a banker. Well, he got a bit of beef, I don't know. But he wasn't there much more than about 10 days before he got...
What was
must have been unfit or something, I don't know, but he just didn't meet the grade.
But generally in your hut, you're all fit enough and...
Oh, well, the trade itself was sort of outdoor life and all that sort of thing, that's what we did.
Was it easy to get on with your fellow recruits?
Well, I did, yeah, we got on quite all right. You got what it, yeah.
And you're all from the same background, more or less? Same area?
Working class of background.
Yeah. So there weren't any kind of like, you know, for want of a better word, toffs, or, you know, there weren't anybody like that that had suddenly found?
No, well, not in the training, but not when I first learned the training. Was it? We went to one of the people that sort of mad about Tom, more or less, when he got in the battalions and everything.
Yeah, so you're doing your route marches, you're doing your gas training. What about weapons training? How long was it for? How long were you at Bransworth before they actually let you, you know, get hold of a gun or...
But we all got issued with rifles, but the rifles I got issued with in the first instance was what they called a Ross. A bit of a Ross. And they were really old-fashioned from the First World War, sort of thing. And I think they fired single shots, I think. You could put so many bullets in the magazine, but he could only fire a single shot at a time. And they were very accurate, this Ross rifle, you know. Once you got the hang of it, quite accurate. And then you got to shoot the Leigh Enfield. But this, you got more educated as a soldier, they got a smarter move and all that sort of thing. There was one guy there, he wasn't very bright. And every time he fired a rifle, he had to clean and polish and all that, and have a look through the barrel and everything like that. So they knew the best thing to do was to not fire a shot at all. So this guy that wasn't very bright, everybody could borrow his rifle. And everybody would have quit, and nobody should borrow his rifle. And use his rifle and all that, you know. So all was always nice and clean, this bloke was, you know. But they called him Enoch, because Enoch was a comedian on the radio at the time, and that, you know, like, and so the village idiot, as it were, and that, you know, and he got called him.
Can you remember what his real name was?
I never did know his name now. I probably did know it, like, but when he went to the battalion again, he got a job in a cookout, and he always had a cigarette in his mouth, and he never took it out. And his job of morning was to have a big bowl of porridge. He'd stand over there, and the cigarette ash would drop in the porridge. It was, and all the cigarette ash got in the porridge and all that, you know.
Did people still eat it?
And I remember once, we had always had a shave in that there. And he went to have a shave in the barber shop. And he still had a cigarette in his mouth. He went, he's more boogie boy than one. So the bloke tried to shave with a cigarette in his mouth. Old Enoch.
So how long were you on the Ross rifle before they put you onto the proper rifle, under the lake?
I just think about a couple of weeks or so.
How did you, had you ever fired a gun before?
Oh, no.
So how did you approach this, and what did you think about it?
Well, I'm left-handed, and of course, when you fire a rifle, they're all made for right-handed people. Consequently, you've got your gun in your left shoulder at the end, you've got to put your arm over the top to get hold of the board and all that. Well, consequently, your rifle was moving about like that, you know. And you weren't very good at it at all, you know, compared to what some guys were.
They didn't try to force you to fired in a right-handed way.
Well, it did, but it was hopeless, you know. Anyway, once they got over, they didn't get concerned about the loading pick, because they passed the basic training sort of how to shoot a target. So he said, no, just take your time. And I got near the ball, near the ball, near the ball, and I finally got a ball. And he says, that's good. He says, don't try again. So I had to stand up, lie down again, try again. And of course, I missed the target, only going to give me a kick up the arse. He said, you know, you can do better than that, you know. And I got to be a decent shot. And I went to finish it with a sniper's course and in Winchelsea. Mm.
So this is moving us forward, but yeah.
Yeah, you know. And but the sniper's course was pretty good because everybody went on the sniper's course, even the Bookshee private, he was the boss for the day. Even the officer that was on the sniper's course had to take orders from the Bookshee private for that day. Right? And maybe a few good men turned off at the head, get the, you know, the.
We'll talk about that when we get forward to that. Yeah. So basically you took to the rifle quite well. You became quite a good shot.
Not a bad shot.
What about the rest of your fellow recruits? Were there any that were absolutely hopeless that couldn't?
Oh well, yeah, it would be, yeah. So what? There was one called Mackay. He was an excellent shot, and Sergeant Major was a very, very clever shot as well. Basically a lot of them were good shots and all that. Mm.
So you were trained on the rifle. What about the other weapons at Bransford?
The Bren gun was very accurate. Only trouble with the Bren gun is you didn't want to know because you had to carry a damn thing, I think.
So when they, at this stage, you would be trained on the rifle, and then when you moved to the Bren gun after that?
Yeah, and you had to strip the Bren gun and put it together again in so many seconds. I don't think it'd be 11 seconds, but then you had to go in a darkened room, pitch dark, and you had to strip the Bren gun and put it together again in so many seconds. Just as you're going to take a photograph of them, pitch dark is happening. You know?
And everybody had to do that?
Everybody had to do that.
And did everybody manage to do it?
Well, I suppose some of them didn't manage to do it in the time, because you had so many seconds to do it, and if you went over. Well, it was say 15 seconds, and it took about 18 or 20. You probably get a little bit of rollicking, and that, you know. But whatever time was, you could after you guys, you could more or less imagine.
What about other weapons? Were you doing like bayonet training at this stage?
Bayonet training. Oh yeah, do you have bayonet training?
What do you remember about that?
Oh yeah, that was okay.
Well, the veterans have talked about the NCOs and encouraged you to shout and so on.
Oh yeah. You had a little bit of bayonet and you had a dummy there and you had to stick it in and shout and hell of a noise and scare the enemy as well as that was really. And stick it in, out, withdraw, and advance and that, you know, and all that sort of thing. You know. That was okay. But when it comes to teaching you with your bayonet, the sergeant bayonet, same sergeant bayonet we've talked about a number of times there.
This is in the battalion?
In the battalion. He said, when I shout fix, you don't fix. When I say bayonet, by God, you'll move. Not exactly God, you'll move, but that, you know. And fix, bayonet, just at your butt stick, regiment, all that sort of thing. And you got quite good at that, you know. But when I used to feel a very forward move, we had really forward move.
What was the NCOs at Bransford? Were they the same? Or?
Well, you got there were some good blokes, and you got the odd one. You had a corporal out there, we used to call him Tojo, you know, because he was a bit, he had an educated young man. He wore glasses, only a lance corporal and all that. You know. Whenever he went out in the bike room, he used to take his corporal and turn it on the other end, had Tojo written on it, put it back in again, they'd come in and say, tut, 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 put it on again. Poor old Tojo. I don't know what happened. Of course, he was just training all the time. They stayed behind, got all the recruits and wasn't good.
But would they use a lot of four-letter words as well?
Oh, no. No.
The foul-mouthed NCO, was he the exception rather than the rule in terms of...
Well, when he got turfed out, you got among the men sort of thing. You know what I mean? The real hardened soldiers and they've been in there for quite some time, perhaps. And the sergeants and the sergeant majors and all that were really... been around, you know.
So they were regulars?
Been around the block like some time like that, you know.
What was their attitude towards the likes of yourself as recruits? Were they friendly? Would they be helpful? Or?
You see, I've got a right load of so-and-so here that, you know, standing in front of Dave Seaborn, buttoned that up, passing up that. And one time, you see, putting up your jacket, your battle dress, eh? Well, of course, you do this. And you put the button in, you come, he said, I told you to put it up, he said, you're putting it down. Just to pick on you, you know, that's what I mean. To make you realise. Right? And he just said, put that foot forward, watch this, you're looking at your back, so and all that. Yeah, stand back, take a pace, and come forward again. And look, don't look at me, no, look at that over there. That. You're a bloody fool. What are you, a bloody fool? Yeah, he said, yes, sir, yes, a bloody fool, sir. You can't stand, take it all. Well, you did. Otherwise, you're.
How long, I mean, so you were called up, what, in, I think, November 41, was that?
Yeah.
Somewhere
yeah.
around about that time. So you were doing your basic training, you were still at Bransford. About how long did it take, do you think, in the course of that training, where you felt, you know, yeah, I'm starting to act and talk?
I'd say by the end of that training, you begin to realise that the smartest thing to do is to keep your mouth shut and just get on with it. And sort of do as I tell you.
And what about in terms of your training? When did you actually start to feel like you were a soldier? You know, when did it start to fall into place?
Not until you went in the battalion.
So you still regarded yourself as a rookie?
Oh, yes, indeed, yeah. Very, very green. You must see, we were very, very naive. I mean, a lot of the youngsters today, they're sharp as tack, but we were just like, although I come from a town, it was a bit of a country bumpkin compared to, you know, the outside world. I'd never been outside South Shields, I only went to Newcastle now and again.
So you'd never even been to Durham before?
No.
So you, in terms of your training at this period, about, in terms of percentage, I mean, how much of it was at weapons training, how much of it was at route marches, you know, in terms of like a balance, what were the...
I'd say about 50-50, and of course you had a kit inspection. You've seen it on the TV, perhaps, you know, they used to come round and just tipple it up and things like that, you know. But when I saw that programme on the TV a little while ago, I don't know why you noticed it yourself on that, one of the blokes said, you've done something wrong, and this sergeant, or corporal, it was, got a dustbin put it over the top of his head. Did you see that, Jim? Yeah. Must be.
It's one of these recreation programs.
Yes,
recreates the 50s.
And I thought, I stuck it out, not an awful lot, but I wouldn't let anybody put a dustbin on the top of my head and just stand there on it, or turn down and give a bit of firm load, give him a left hand or something like that. I would never stood for that. You know, but I don't think many people would have done either, you know. This guy just had to stand and take a dustbin off his head. All eruption, all that, all over the place. Man.
Now you were in the army. You were at Bransforth. When you were talking to, you know, your new friends and so on that you'd made by this stage, what was your general attitude towards the army and towards the war? You know, you were there. You were in it. What did you think?
Everyone always moaning all the time. You know.
What were you moaning about?
Oh, just having to go on a route march on jankers or be confined to bikes, or whatever it was you moaned about. You never had a good word to say about it. It's only when you get away from that sort of thing, you realise what a good time you had in the head.
And were you able to get back to Jarrow, to South Shields on leave at all?
I think after the first week, I think you got back to take whatever civilian clothes you had with you back home. You know, and you wear your uniform, and then you come back just a weekend. And of course, that friend, Hodge of mine, he was on leave at the time. He was in the artillery, he got caught put in the artillery. He was a brigadier, but he got put in the artillery the same day as I went in the infantry. And of course, he took me back to the Newcastle station, and we had to wait at the Newcastle to get the train to Durham. And of course, one of the sergeants was there like that, you know. And he was looking at me like this. And my mate says, who's that? I said, that's one of our sergeants. What's like that? I said, oh, I said, you know. She wanted to go and punch his belly head. Hey, keep quiet, keep pretty quiet. He said, it was teasing. Right? Anyway, I chased him back home after I got the train. Next morning, the sergeant came to me and says, who's that fellow going to punch me in the head? You know. But he said, the guy wasn't too bad. Wasn't too bad at all.
Can you remember who he was?
You change your head, Brooke, that's all I know. He was okay, yeah.
And so, when you went back home on leave, and you talked about, you had your friend who was in the artillery, and I suppose you'd compare notes.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Did you ever feel that maybe you'd made a mistake being in the infantry, or were you happy being in the infantry? Were you happy with
it? Well, it never occurred to me, I suppose.
That was just the army to you?
Yes, the basic training, I suppose, was pretty much the same for him as me. You know. I remember when I got home that weekend, I said, look at him there. Looks like a great big German. Because I had only hair cut off now, you know. Looks like a big German just shouting on that, you know. Just, and I couldn't get back quick enough. Not that I was wanting to get back. You know, had that way, like, you know, just know that, you know, you're scared in case you drop
it. So what would happen if you were on leave and you got, what would happen, let's say, if you turned up, like, a day late or...
You probably got put in... Maybe confiscate any leave you might have had or confined to barracks for a week or something like that, you know.
Did you have any contact with any officers at this stage?
No. That one got in the army when I went to battalion. He came from my hometown, but he kept himself aloof. He went to the same school as I did, but of course he must have got a better education.
Who was that? Can you remember his name?
Dorian, Lieutenant Dorian.
So he was from South Shields as well?
He was from South Shields,
yeah. And he was your platoon officer?
He was,
later on.
But he never interfered. He never sort of a brother sort of thing, you know. Fellow South Shields lads, no, he never cut that way, he never kept himself, you know, away from here.
Now, you were doing your basic training. About how long did that last, do you think?
Probably about 2 hours, 3 months, I think I'd done. Something like that, I don't remember exact time.
Were there any kind of specialist courses you did at this stage? I mean, other veterans have talked about learning to drive and so on.
Oh, no chance of learning to drive.
So it was all just the basic, it was route marches and weapons training,
exactly.
And gas.
I never got a chance to drive at all.
What about, I mean, this is pretty early on in your army career, but had you given any thought to kind of promotion? And because obviously, you know, there's extra money. You know, what did you and your friends think about that? About, you know, the
well, I suppose I could have been promoted to a corporal or something like that, like, but when you get a bunch of lads, you're what they call buckers, you know, like you stick together through thick and thin, sort of thing, and you want to be together, and that probably stops you from, if you had any promotional ambitions at all, that would get knocked on the head, be amazing.
You would lose your friends.
Yeah.
Other veterans have talked about that the army wasn't keen on, say, if somebody was a corporal or a sergeant, still being friends with the people that he was friends with. Could you sense that even at Brandsmith?
Well, you had to keep even in the distance apart. I got friendly with quite a few of them, especially a good friend and a sergeant called Bill Greaves, who come from Jarrah. Him and I was quite, but another fellow, Sergeant Slater, he and I got on quite well. But of course, that was it. You had to just, made by not paint by if you saw him, that, you know.
And this was in the battalion?
But other than that, like, they had to keep away. And if you started to get to with Bill Greaves there, I would say, what the hell are we all in, Bill? Sergeant to you.
And
you had to be that, you realised, no, you had to be like that.
So this was about 3 months of training. What happened at the end of that? Can you remember anything else in this period of any other incidents or episodes?
I remember or people? One time, which is what happened. There's a mate of mine had a date with this girl, but in Brunsmith, and he was on guard. So he says to me, "Mac, would you do my guard?" He said, I'll go on, he says, and then I'll come back and you take over. And he went up to Willington, I think it was his birthday, what it was. So I said, okay. I said, no, you'd get back in good time, won't you? He said, oh, yeah. Of course, he didn't get back in time, because it had arranged for me to be on guard, to be on the gate when he comes back. And he was going to say, is that you, Mark? Come in, no, not see. What happened, for some reason, they found out that I was standing in for him. So they put me in the guard room, right? And this bloke come looking for me, like saying, hey, there, Mark, and of course the sergeant, not Benny back, he said, come on, he said, you're going to the guard room as well. So consequently, there was a guard missing. You see, there was a shorter guard on, which meant the guards that was on guard had to do his turn as well. So he said, you go back and get yourself undressed and come back here to do your guard. Well, he had a few drinks, this fella did. And he went back in the bar room. And of course, he went out to have the lights on. As soon as it was dark, lights out, he took the sheets, the blackouts down, and he went there, cut your head down. And of course, he went in, as soon as he went in, half canned all that, put all the lights on, blazing through the bar room and all that, all over the cap and all that. And this corporal got in the corner and shouted, said, put that bloody light out. So he turned around, he so furious that me not being there, him had to go to the guard room. He picked the fire bucket of water, threw it all over the corporal, hit him with the bucket. So the man came off the guard room, said, don't need the guard, put him actually in the guard room and jail himself. And that's one of the experiences I had. And of course, the next morning, when they're counting up the guards, and I was still there, the guard that was relieving us, there was supposed to be seven of us on guard, or six of us on guard, there was seven. And I was the only one. So we said, how come we've got seven? He says, well, there's six. Oh, he says, better than me, one short, so we let it go. So once you can do with that one.
Did you get into much trouble, you know, in terms of getting on jangers and things like that?
Well, not in the training, I didn't, no. I had trouble there.
Later on.
Don't think, which didn't do anything really nasty at all.
Yeah, yeah. So at the end of this period of training, how did you get to know where you were going next, and how did that work out? And where did people
go? You had met some good friends in the platoon, but like I said, your dad could have been about that. And
what was your number, by the way? Just did you get it on
record? My number.
Yeah.
4469285.
Yeah.
And. Mm-hmm. And you always remember that number. And of course, the guys you got really friendly with in the basic training, some of you went to B Company, I went to B Company, or they went to C Company, or A Company, or D Company.
So amongst these 30 men that you were with, where did they go? What happened to them? Well, as far as you can remember, did you all go to the 16th Battalion, or did?
No, one probably went to 16th Battalion. Oh yeah, I think they all got to 16th Battalion.
But all 30 men would have gone down.
Different companies, yeah. But I didn't. They all didn't come to B Company, all 30 men. No, it was a good change, you know. Just,
did you ever leave before you were posted down south?
Leave before I went abroad, you mean?
No, before you did your basic training.
Yeah.
Was there like a passing out parade or anything of that
kind? Oh, there would be. Yeah, there would be. Yeah.
And what would that involve?
Just smart, don't prove the fact that they're soldiers, sort of thing. You know.
Was there any kind of, other veterans have talked about, like a test of elementary training where with a rifle and so on, they had to hit a certain number of targets from a certain distance and things like that. Do you remember anything about that?
I suppose there was, really. I can't recall anything special about that sort of thing, like, but you had to be a reasonable shot, and you had to know how to defend yourself with it. Because you said, and then learn with your bayonet how to. So you had your bayonet on the end of your rifle. When you're teaching with your bayonet, the corporal or sergeant, what it was, had a big long pole, and on this end was a boxing glove soaked in water, and this end was like a quoit, like a, you know, a loop. And of course, you had to stick your bayonet in this loop and be quick, or they come on top with this boxing glove, and you got, when you clip it up, when he hit you, it was bloody hard enough, you know. That was part and parcel of the training, so you got to go up there, get out of that way, and I'd be quick in the ball back, you know.
We haven't mentioned grenade training, and was that, did you do
oh,
that?
Oh yes, we did some grenade training, yes.
What did that involve?
And I'd thrown a grenade. You see, a lot of people throw a cricket ball or things like that, but when you throw a grenade, you've got to do it more like a bowling thing, like you're bowling a cricket ball. You've got to throw a grenade. You don't throw a grenade like that, you've got to spin around like that.
An overarm.
And throw that
overarm.
Way, you see. Yeah. And of course, you've got like a Z-shaped trench. You stand there and throw a grenade, run down here, get down here, in the Z sort of thing. And or a knee rather, I suppose, really. And you had to pull the pin out, throw it in the air, make sure it landed, It was different, somebody sent in different conditions, Andy,